Hare Krishna, you can hear me? Yes? Okay, very good. Jaya Bhuvanesha Srila Prabhupada. I hope you all had a nice Nrisimha Chaturdasi yesterday. I'm not quite sure how to, or how you might have celebrated it, but I'm sure most of you celebrated it online, if you celebrated it. And I know various lectures were given, and I think more lectures will be given. I believe there's going to be another festival on the 10th. From a Hungarian festival, and a lot of devotees, I'm sure, will be online for that. But we had, for the Russian-speaking devotees yesterday, we gave a class, and it turned out to be a little bit longer than I had initially anticipated. I was speaking from a few verses from Laghu Bhagavatamrita, and I expanded on those verses from a couple of verses from the Bhagavatam and some prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev from the Bhagavatam. And we covered a lot of topics about Lord Nrisimhadev's appearance, his eternal dham in Vaikuntha and Jhanaloka, and his form, which is an eternal form, evidence which is given by Jiva Goswami, both in the Krishna Sandarbha and Krama Sandarbha, that the form of Lord Nrisimhadev, half man, half lion, is an eternal form that is always manifest in the Vaikuntha planets. And we also gave reference to Laghu Bhagavatamrita, which described how Lord Nrisimhadev has other forms as well, in different appearances and different colors. And he described that they are called vilas forms. And Laghu Bhagavatamrita gives some detail in the beginning. Maybe I should just give a little bit of that, just to give you a little bit of understanding about what I'm talking about. Because I wanted to read a few verses today that I didn't get a chance to read yesterday. Number one, I couldn't find them. And number two, when I did find them, I realized if I would have read them to the Russian-speaking audience, it would have taken an hour to read it and have it translated. So I'm going to take advantage of the English-speaking audience today. And I can read that little section that I wanted to read, which I wasn't able to read yesterday. But then maybe we'll just continue the topic of Lord Nrisimhadev today to some degree. And we'll make that our talk before our japa today. Srila Rupa Goswami explains in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita in the beginning, he makes it very clear his purpose for compiling Laghu Bhagavatamrita was to establish the Parivas Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is that Ete Changsakala Pungsa Krishna's two Bhagavans Swayam. And the point is that this is the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the pillar of the Bhagavatam from which all the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam expands, to establish that point that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the introduction in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, it was described that Rupa Goswami wrote this because there were many misconceptions prevalent at the time, even at that time, people had the conception that Vishnu is the original supreme and Krishna is simply an expansion of Vishnu. And I believe that is even still prevalent to some degree, and even in India today. But his primary purpose was to establish that Krishna is the original supreme personality of Godhead. And the whole Laghu Bhagavatamrita is simply an elaboration of that point. And in the beginning, he speaks about the different forms of the Lord. He says that there first is the Svayam Rupa. And Svayam Rupa is the original form of the Lord, Krishna. And it's a form that is not dependent on any other form. That's how it's defined. Whereas, and we know in the verse in the Bhagavatam, it's described that just like so many other forms of the Lord, and Prabhupada gives the example, like so many candles can be lit from the original candle, but still there's the original candle, and all other candles are dependent upon being lit by the original candle. So he establishes that the Svayam Rupa, Krishna, is not dependent on any other form. And his thesis is to establish that point. And he gives also another very important point, which I felt I should bring up, is that in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami does not spend so much time with trying to establish logical proof in his presentation. He says that Shastra is the best means for obtaining knowledge. It is the most sound, solid means, and oftentimes various types of arguments and logic are given to as an expansion upon the statements of Shastra. But throughout the Bhagavatamrita, mostly he uses Shastra as his reference. And therefore, there are many verses given from various Upanishads and other sources from the Bhagavatam and to establish the point that he wishes to make, that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, how is this connected with Lord Nrisimhadev? Because actually, that's what we spoke mostly about yesterday, is Lord Nrisimhadev. And he explains that the most complete forms of the Lord, there is the Svayam Rupa, there's the Tad Ekatma Rupa form of the Lord. The Tad Ekatma Rupa form has two divisions, which are Vilas and Svangsa. And the Tad Ekatma Rupa forms of the Lord are forms of the Lord where there is a slight difference of appearance, and they're almost as full in opulences as Krishna himself, but to a little lesser degree. And then of those two forms, there is the Vilas form, which is what I just described, and then there is a Svangsa form. The Svangsa form is a form of the Lord who is also difference of an appearance, but he also doesn't manifest as much of the opulences which are manifest in the Vilas form. Examples he gave of the Vilas forms is just like Narayan is a Vilas of Govinda. And he said that Vasudeva is a Vilas of Narayan. So in other words, almost the same potencies, difference of appearance, and of course, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the third classification he gives is Avesh. And there are many Avesh, which are empowered avatars of the Lord who manifest varying degrees of the potencies of the Lord to fulfill a particular purpose. But now to Lord Nrisimhadev. He says the most complete forms of the Lord, they are called para avasta. They are the most complete forms of the Lord. And he gives the most complete forms of the Lord, Lord Nrisimhadev, Lord Ramachandra, and Krishna. And he says the reason why they're the most complete is because they all manifest all six opulences in full. Whereas the other forms do not manifest the six opulences in full, these forms do. And it's interesting that I was curious and I was looking for the evidence, because he doesn't really give much evidence how it is that Lord Nrisimhadev manifested all opulence or manifests all opulence in full. And he says the evidence is found in the Nrisimha Tapani Upanishad. And if you, and specifically Baladev Vijayabhushan says, because Baladev Vijayabhushan wrote the commentaries to Lagu Bhagavatamrita. He says, for those who are interested in finding out how Lord Nrisimhadev manifests all six opulences in full, this is expanded on it in the Nrisimha Tapani Upanishad. So sure enough, I looked for the Nrisimha Tapani Upanishad, and it, there's no translation of it. So I don't have access to any translation of it. And but I'm going to follow the thesis of Rupa Goswami is, let's not go with the logical proofs. Let's just take the statements of Shastra and accept them. Sometimes people have a hard time. Western minds, I know, sometimes have a real hard time with just having to accept the statements of Shastra. And they're always looking for, well, what's the logical proof? Because if I can't be logically convinced, why should I accept? And it's even surprisingly, when I made that whole presentation yesterday, I said I'm going to be following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami in this presentation, and we're going to give the not logical proof, but we're going to give Shastra to establish the conclusive truths, and we're not going to expand on them in any other way. And then I just noticed in the chat section afterwards, people were trying to understand logically a statement that I made just reading Shastra, because it just didn't fit into their mindset. But nonetheless, this is what Rupa Goswami says, that the most complete forms are the para avasta forms. They are Lord Nrisimhadev, Lord Ramachandra, and Krishna. And then, of course, he goes on to establish his thesis in chapter 5, making it very clear why Krishna is superior, the most superior. And that's what we're going to read about. I'm going to read a little bit about that. And but we're going to read about Lord Nrisimhadev. And we'll read some of the verses about Lord Nrisimhadev from Lagu Bhagavatamrita. And they were in the beginning of the fifth chapter, where he says, he's quoting Padma Purana. He says, now the para avasta forms, according to the Padma Purana, Uttara, Kanda, Nrisimha, Ramachandra, and Krishna are complete in all six qualities. They are para avasta forms of the Supreme Lord, like lamps lit from another lamp. And then short purport. The perfections of Godhead are exhibited to different degrees by various expansions of Krishna, who alone fully exhibits all six categories of perfection. The three most glorious forms of the Supreme Person are designated in Vedic texts as para avasta, most perfect. The Lord exhibits his perfections in progressively greater completeness as Nrisimha, as Ramachandra, and finally in his ultimate form as Krishna. And now he's going to give his evidence that although they are para avasta, still he's going to give his reasons why Krishna is, what's the word I'm looking for? Stands out, unique, above Lord Nrisimhadev and Lord Ramachandra. And now I'm going to read about Lord Nrisimhadev. These were the verses we read yesterday, and we expanded on them yesterday. I'm not going to repeat that and do it again. I'm only just going to read the verses. Of these three, Sri Nrisimha is praised as follows. I offer my homage to Lord Hari, who has the face of a lion. He delights Prahlad's heart and tears apart his devotee's ignorance. His luster is like that of the autumn moon. And that we spoke about a lot yesterday. And I'll just summarize it. We spoke about how oftentimes we conceive of Lord Nrisimhadev as a person, as a personality, the Supreme Lord, who is most reliable to be called upon for protection. That's how we think of Lord Nrisimhadev. And he protects his devotees in many respects, but not only does he protect his devotees when his devotees are facing physical harm, but another form of protection is described right here. He protects the devotees by tearing apart their devotees' ignorance. And we explained essentially yesterday that that the root cause of all suffering in the material body is ignorance. So it's just as important, if not more important, to pray to Lord Nrisimhadev to tear apart our ignorance so that we don't have to come back to him in the future and pray to him to please protect my body. It's just a logical. Of course, praying to protect the body and to protect myself in all respects is no way mundane. We can certainly justifiable to pray to the Lord for protection. And I even told the story yesterday how Srila Prabhupada I can't remember what year it was either 69 or 70 maybe, when Prabhupada came downstairs from the Los Angeles temple after he found out that a pipe bomb had been thrown into the temple and a few devotees were affected by it, not injured badly, but affected by it. And Prabhupada was about to leave for San Francisco, so he sat down in the Vyasasan and he called all the devotees together and he taught them each word at a time the Nrisimha mantra. At one word at a time, he gave it to them, and he said, from now on, we should chant this mantra for protection of the devotees. So, is certainly to protect the devotees and to pray to Lord Nrisimhadev for protection in that respect is a reliable personality to approach for such protection in times of difficulty. But the point we were talking about yesterday from this verse is another form of protection that Lord Nrisimhadev provides. And there are verses in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam which emphasize this point. As Prahlad Maharaj prayed to Lord Nrisimhadev, with your nails, please enter my heart and tear my heart open and rip out all the desires for fruitive activities within the core of my heart. And therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is praying this way to Lord Nrisimhadev. And we talked about that yesterday. We read a lot from the fifth canto, as I'm just summarizing. So that was a verse we read yesterday. And then the next verse, the goddess of speech resides in his mouth and goddess Lakshmi on his chest. Complete knowledge resides in his heart. I worship that Lord Nrisimha. As soon as Lord Nrisimha began his deep roar, lotus-born Brahma became stunned. Thus the sage disclosed to the king the fury of the Lord who was born from the pillar. As described in the seventh canto, the hair on Nrisimhadev's head shook the clouds and scattered them here and there. His glaring eyes stole the effulgence of the luminaries in the sky, and his breathing agitated the oceans. Because of his roaring, the elephants guarding the directions abandoned their posts. Airplanes were thrown into outer space and the upper planetary system by the hair on Nrisimhadev's head. Because of the pressure of the Lord's lotus feet, the earth appeared to slip from its position, while hills and mountains sprang up due to his intolerable force. Because of the Lord's bodily effulgence, both the sky and all directions diminished in their natural illumination. He quotes these verses to establish how ferocious Lord Nrisimhadev was, both in his appearance and how he appeared. It was very fearful. And he created a quite a fearful appearance, not only as later displayed even in the presence of the demigods, but he displayed a fearful appearance throughout the whole universe when he appeared. And then the next verse, he says that although Lord Nrikeshwari is very ferocious, he is not at all fearsome to his devotees. With them, he behaves like a female lion with her cubs, but for others, his form is very terrible. All blissful glories of this divine lion incarnation are revealed in the venerable Nrisimha Tapani Upanishad. And then in the purport, Baladev Vijayabhushan says, those who want to know more about the glories of Sri Nrisimha that qualify him as one of the three Paravasta forms of the Supreme Lord can consult Nrisimha Tapani Upanishad. Any of you know where the Nrisimha Tapani Upanishad can be consulted? I'd be eager to know. I'd be eager to find it out. I looked it up. I saw some questionable translations of it. I wasn't satisfied. The Supreme Soul, Nrisimhadev, is said to reside on Janaloka and on Vishnuloka beyond the material universe. So that was the description we read yesterday about Lord Nrisimhadev, and we expanded on that part. This is the part that I was going to read from yesterday, and I couldn't find it at the time, but I found it today. I'd like to read from it. It'll take about maybe 10 minutes. So listen carefully, and as I read, and if I see there's a need to explain something, I'll try to do it with minimal words. This is text 40 on chapter 5 of Laghu Bhagavatamrita. At this point, someone may ask whether Lord Nrisimha and Lord Ramachandra are on an equal level with Krishna. To answer this question, let us review how the Vishnu Purana addresses this issue. Okay? Right to the Vishnu Purana. This is the Vishnu Purana. Part 4 of the Vishnu Purana, 4th chapter, 4th part, 15th chapter, first two verses. Maitreya asks this question. After Vishnu killed Hiranyakashipu and later Ravana, the Jiva, who had taken birth as those demons, achieved facilities for material enjoyment even the demigods cannot attain. Why, in those circumstances, did he not achieve the liberation of merging into the eternal Lord Hari, as he did after he took birth as Shishupal, who was killed by the Lord? And first time I read this, I'm sure a lot of people, same thing, because the mind starts going, thinking logically. Of course, Hiranyakashipu didn't achieve liberation. Of course. Why? Because it says in the Bhagavatam, it was the first birth of Jai. And Jai was cursed to take three births. So first he had to take birth as Hiranyakashipu, then he had to take birth as Ravana, and then he had to take birth as Shishupal. So therefore, Maitreya is asking this question. After Vishnu killed Hiranyakashipu and later Ravana, the Jiva who had taken birth as those demons achieved facilities for material enjoyment even the demigods cannot attain. Why, in those circumstances, did he not achieve the liberation of merging into the eternal Lord Hari, as he did after he took birth as Shishupal, who was killed by the Lord? Now, as we continue to read these verses, we're going to get the answer to that question. And it may not be the answer you expected to hear. But keep that in mind. If the question is there, it was there in me. I had the question too. But I kept on reading and I found it. Sri Parasara answered, "To kill the king of the demons, he who is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of all the worlds revealed his unparalleled form of Nrisimha. At that time, Hiranyakashipu did not realize that Nrisimha was Vishnu. Thinking that this powerful being had accumulated heaps of extremely pious credits, Hiranyakashipu focused his attention on him under the strong impulsion of the motive passion. By concentrating his mind on the Lord in this way, while the Lord killed him, in his next life, as ten-headed Ravana, Hiranyakashipu was only given facilities for material enjoyment that are unequaled in the three worlds." Okay? Hiranyakashipu didn't see Lord Nrisimhadeva as the Supreme Lord, thought him as a very powerful personality, and because he was did not see him as the Supreme Lord, even though he was killed by the Lord, and he got a powerful position his next life as Ravana. I'm not going to expand on it anymore. More to come in the verses to come. Because of Hiranyakashipu's bewilderment, his mind did not actually take shelter of and unite with the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Absolute Truth, without beginning or end. Then in his next life as Ravana, under the sway of Cupid, he became obsessed with Janaki. Thus, although he saw the Lord in his form as the son of Dasarath, he failed to become spiritually attracted to him or to realize, quote, "Here is the infallible Lord." Instead, he conceived of him as an ordinary human. And again, he obtained diminished results from dying at Lord Achyuta's hands. He next took birth as Shishupal in the glorious, world-renowned family of the kings of Chedi and enjoyed unimpeded power. Ravana didn't see Lord Ramachandra as the Supreme Lord. He thought him as a powerful human. And in the commentary, it even says that he looked at Sita very lustfully as just a beautiful, attractive woman that he wanted to enjoy. And therefore, his mind was not absorbed in Lord Ramachandra's divinity. Therefore, when the Lord killed him, he took birth in the world-renowned family of the kings of Chedi Raj, and he enjoyed unimpeded power. As Shishupal, don't forget, this is all verses that Rupa Goswami is quoting from the what was it? Vishnu Purana, which was questions answered to Maitreya. As Shishupal, he found cause to chant all the Supreme Lord's names. With his mind absorbed incessantly in the Lord, after several lifetimes of hatred, he uttered all his names to criticize, scold, and otherwise abuse him. Whether Shishupal was walking, eating, bathing, sitting, sleeping, or doing anything else, his deep-seated envy caused his heart and mind to be inescapably absorbed in the image of the Lord's form. He saw that the Lord had eyes as perfectly beautiful as fully blossomed lotus petals, that he wore a brilliantly effulgent yellow garment, that a spotlessly beautiful helmet decorated his head, and that ornaments graced his four glorious stout arms, with which he held a conch, disc, club, and lotus. Thus, as Shishupal, he called out Krishna's names in anger and fixed his attention upon him. From the halo of rays emanating from the disc the Lord hurled to kill him, Shishupal could finally see that the personality of Godhead and the infallible brilliance of his personal form were the supreme absolute truth. This sight rid Shishupal of the contamination of his enmity toward the Lord. Because he was always absorbed in his form, because he was always calling out his names, always referring to him in a very envious way, spewing his name constantly, and different names were given by Baladeva Vijayabhushan. He was referring to him as Vasudev. He was referring to him as Garuda Vahan. He was referring to him as Pundarikaksha at Lotus Eyes, and so many different names that he was repeating again and again, that by the time the Lord evoked his Sudarshan Chakra, and as the verse is described, Krishna insinuated himself. Insinuated himself means that there's different meanings to insinuation, but it simply means that he got himself into the mind of Shishupal. He got himself into the mind because of his all attractive features. Lord Nrisimhadev wasn't able to do that. Very ferocious appearance. But Krishna, and his all attractive features, it got him. It captured him. Not only that, but all his names got it. He got it. It captured him. In his mind, in his thoughts, in his vision, everything was there. So by the time the chakra came, and he was so absorbed in thought of Krishna that he got liberation. Because that's what Krishna does. That's how Krishna is superior to Nrisimha and Ram, even though they are part of Avastra. And that's the point that Srila Rupa Goswami is going to establish here. And another point that he brings up, which is brought up in the commentary by Baladeva Vijayabhushan, we oftentimes concede that Shishupal merged into the body of Krishna and got Sayuja Mukti. But actually, Baladeva Vijayabhushan, I can't remember where it is. We might have already passed it. But he actually explains there's different types of liberation. And one is called Sahayoga. And that Shishupal achieved Sahayoga, which was he got a relationship with the Lord. It's not that he simply merged and no relationship. He established a relationship with the Lord. That's all it says. The Sahayoga means established a relationship. Now, of course, as Shishupal, who was Jai, he got his relationship. He went back to Vaikuntha and took up his service and began rendering service after his third birth. But now, we're going to get to some interesting points. And this will be the concluding points before we get to our japa for today. So at that moment, the Supreme Lord's disc quickly dispatched him, and all his accumulated sins were burnt away by his remembering the Lord. The Lord finished Shishupal's material existence, and Shishupal merged into the Lord. Now I have explained the whole situation to you. Certainly, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upon those who describe and remember him, even in a mood of hatred, he bestows a fruit rarely obtained by demigods, asuras, and other superhuman beings. What to speak then of his reciprocation with those who have true devotion for him? I'm tempted to read the purport, but I won't. In this passage from the Vishnu Purana, Parashara Rishi does not mention the two associates of Vishnu who each took three births as demons. Rupa Goswami says, Therefore, we cannot consider these demons who appear every day of Brahma, incarnations of Vishnu's two associates, who would not realistically fall down in every kalpa. I'll read the... this is the only commentary I'm going to read. It's interesting commentary. Someone may object. How does this discourse between Parashara and Maitreya show that Krishna is the original Godhead? We know from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about the fall of Jai and Vijay from Vaikuntha due to the curse of the four Kumaras. We also know about their release from the curse and their return to service in Vaikuntha when Krishna killed them in their third incarnations. Their liberation after three births as demons was the realization of the terms of their curse. Where is the evidence of Krishna's unique power to liberate? It was already destined. Where's the evidence? They were already assured that they would be liberated because it was their third birth. It was already prearranged. So someone may think that way. This objection is countered by verses 50 and 51. Verses 50 and 51 is in this passage from the Vishnu Purana, Parashara Rishi does not mention the two associates of Vishnu who each took three births as demons. Therefore, we cannot consider these demons who appear every day of Brahma incarnations of Vishnu's two associates who would not realistically fall down every kalpa. Continuing in the purport, this objection is countered by verses 50 and 51. Parashara deliberately did not mention the two fallen associates of Vaikuntha because he understood they could not fall from Vaikuntha every day of Brahma. That would contradict the promises that Lord Hari is always kind to his devotees and that one who attains Vaikuntha never returns to this world. The Lord fights with demons in each kalpa, but not necessarily with Vaikuntha associates. The fall of Jai and Vijay from Vaikuntha, related in the third canto, own desire. The Lord of Vaikuntha expresses this desire in the third canto as follows. Sanskrit, I'll skip. The Lord then said to his attendants, Jai and Vijay, depart this place, but fear not. All glory is unto you. Though I am able to nullify the Brahman's curse, I will not do so. On the contrary, it has my approval. Those are the verses from the third canto. And then purport continues. Commentaries on this verse explain that Jai and Vijay fell by their own desire. When they had heard bards in Lord Narayan's court singing about their master's prowess in fighting with demons, they wanted to see how he enjoyed this combat. And the Lord responded to the desires of his devotees. Krishna is thus glorified with the phrases, Svecha Mayasya, you appear according to the desires of your dear devotees, and Bhaktecho Pata Dehaya, you assume your various forms to fulfill your devotees' desires. Someone may then object, don't these glorifications contradict the declaration that no one returns from Vaikuntha? Certainly, no one ever returns from Vaikuntha, impelled by karma. But someone can return if he wants to. If it were considered improper to come down from Vaikuntha by one's own desire, then Lord Hari himself would be guilty of that impropriety. On the other hand, we also learn from the Bhagavatam that one does not have to return from the region of Vaikuntha present within such a loka in the material world. Sanskrit quoted,
Translation. Then Lord Shiva reached the luminous realm of Vaikuntha beyond all darkness, where the Supreme Lord Narayan resides. That realm is the destination of renunciants who've attained peace and given up all violence against other creatures. Going there, one never returns. End of purport. Conclusion. Jai and Vijay descend in one Brahmakalpa. But in other Brahmakalpas, Lord Nisringadev descends. Lord Ramachandra descends. Krishna descends. But that doesn't necessarily kill associates of Vaikuntha who came to fight with them. He descends to kill demons. Therefore, the appearance of Jai and Vijay was a one-time event. They had that desire. They wanted to see how Krishna fights with devotees. And also, as described in the Bhagavatam, they didn't want to stay more than three births. They had their choice, seven births as devotees, three births as demons. But it was because it was also their desire. They wanted to fight. And that's the evidence which Srila Rupa Goswami gives in this part. And he summarizes it. I don't have time to do it. It's already 5:30 my time. And he summarizes everything he says in his subsequent verses. Everything he says, he gives a summary of it to establish why Krishna is superior. And in that respect, I'll just read one short reference from one purport. Thus, although the three para-avasta forms of the Supreme Lord are essentially equal, only the Swayam Rupa, Krishna, always manifests the specific potency required for liberation. Demons killed by Lord Nisringa and Lord Ramachandra do not generally obtain liberation. Therefore, Sri Krishna, more than any other form of God, is Bhagavan. Conclusion. Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. That is his conclusion. He summarizes his conclusion. And then in the next chapter, he goes on to speak about the glories of his devotees and how his devotees also are very worshipable. Worshipable, yeah, worshipable. But that's another topic. I wanted to read those verses yesterday. I didn't get a chance. I wanted to take the opportunity to read them today, to share this with you. If you have questions, I'm not going to open it up for questions. I'm sure there are questions. There always are when I speak on this topic. But you might want to read Laghu Bhagavatamrita. All the evidence is there to answer your questions from Shastra and more. Now we will go on and chant some japa together. And Jai, all glories to Lord Nisringadev, glories to Lord Ramachandra, glories to Krishna, Swayam Rupa Krishna, who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who most manifests all the qualities of Bhagavan than any other form. And who is most attractive, and who insinuates himself into the heart of anybody who meditates upon him. And in fact, that point, that was one point I forgot to read. It's just a nice point. I hope I can find it quickly. It was just in the purport that I just read. I can't find it. But basically, the essence of it was that better to think of Krishna favorably, not like Shishupal. And he says, if this happens to somebody like Vishnu, if Shishupal, who was so much absorbed in Krishna's names, Krishna's form, Krishna's effulgence, and and all respects was absorbed in him out of envy, then the what to speak of a devotee who's absorbed in Krishna's form, in his qualities, in his names, out of love. So that was also another very, very, very strong point which was established by Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Huh? Yes, I'll take a little. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Vrinda. Can I take a few more minutes of your time? I wanted to simply bring up one other point. I'm not going to expand on it. I'm going to bring up one other point in relationship to the different evidences that we gave and topics we spoke from, speaking from the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Certain points were established, such as that Jai and Vijay came because they wanted to, from Vaikuntha, because they heard bards hearing about how the Lord descends and fights with his devotees, and likes to fight, likes to fight, and therefore, because he likes to fight, they thought it might be nice to come down and to experience fighting. So that's how it was initially that introduced the thought, because they heard the bards glorifying these characteristics of the Lord in Vaikuntha, and therefore they voluntarily came down, and they took three births, not millions of births and millions of species of life. They took three births, and after the third birth, they went back and to engage in their service, and therefore the emphasis was also by the Baladeva Vijayabhushan that more emphasis was on, and the evidence that was given of the Shastra, that having once come to this world and goes back to the spiritual world, one never comes back again. Krishna makes that clear. Evidence is very clear in the Bhagavad Gita. And more evidence was given in terms of the giant Vijay taking three births, going back to Vaikuntha, and therefore they certainly wouldn't come back in every Brahma Kalpa, because once having gone back, one never comes back again, unless he wants to. And the point that is being made is, why would giant Vijay want to come back every Brahma Kalpa when Lord appears to come and kill demons? They already found out what it was like. Their service as gatekeepers in Vaikuntha was much more satisfying. So they don't have to come back every Brahma Kalpa. It's just simply to fight with Lord Nrisingadev and to Ramachandra and with Krishna. And therefore, when they come in other Brahma Kalpas, then they come to fight with demons. Just demons. That's it. Demons. Jai and Vijay don't come every Brahma Kalpa to fight. That much we know from the evidence of what we heard from Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Most of the emphasis is on once going there, what there, one never comes back. Then so many questions could start coming up. Well, if one, and then the point was made, if one wants to go, then he can go. And then, of course, then sometimes devotees start thinking about, well, you know, okay. And then, anyways, they can take it into speculations, and they can take it into then different arguments. And then when it gets to that point, then I say, hold on there. Can you please listen to this quote? It's one of my favorite quotes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And I would like to end with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's quote. If anybody has questions or wants to go there, or wants to, if you have my email address, if you want to send it off and say, what about this, what about that? And no, this is my answer to those questions, This is my answer. It's the same answer you'll get even if you have my email address. It's the same address. I mean, I might elaborate on something. It's hard to say. It depends how the question was asked. And it depends upon, you know, the mood. If it's anyways, this would likely be my answer from Sri Bhakti Loka. This is Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Follow it if you can. Fortunately, I have my English-speaking audience, and I don't have to wear a straight jacket and wait for my translator to figure out what I'm saying. While considering the fourth reality, the Amnaya says that the living entities are minute particles of the spiritual sun, Krishna, and they are innumerable. As the spiritual world is manifested by Krishna's chit, or spiritual potency, and as the material world is manifested by the inferior illusory energy, similarly, the living entities are manifested by a portion of the spiritual energy. Krishna's spiritual energy, Krishna's spiritual form has all qualities in full, and those qualities are naturally present in the living entities in minute quantity. That should all be clear so far. So far, Krishna's qualities are manifested in full, manifest in the living entities in minute quantity. Krishna is supremely independent. Living entities are minutely independent. The independent nature of Krishna is found insignificantly in the living entities. For this reason, the living entities claim to be independent. As a result, all living entities have developed different propensities. By one propensity, the living entity searches for his own happiness, and by another propensity, he searches for Krishna's happiness. Thus, living entities are divided into two groups, those searching for their own happiness and those searching for Krishna's happiness. Those who search for Krishna's happiness are called Nitya Mukta, and those who search for their own happiness are called Nitya Badha. In this regard,
It's raining now? Quite heavy. I'm not missing my walk then. Those who search for Krishna's happiness are called Nitya Mukta. Those who search for their own happiness are called Nitya Badha. It's also interesting to note that Jai and Vijay, they wanted to give Krishna pleasure fighting. They didn't stop thinking about Krishna's happiness. They wanted this. Well, Krishna enjoys fighting. Let's give him pleasure. Let's come and fight with him. Right? It's another interesting point. And we should never think that they, as also established, they fell because of karma. No, it was their desire. They wanted to give Krishna pleasure and fight. Okay? Where was I? Those who search for Krishna's happiness are called Nitya Mukta. Those who search for their own happiness are called Nitya Badha. In this regard, all inconceivable natures are under the subordination of spiritual time. The time factor of the spiritual nature is a state of eternal present. But in the inferior illusory energy, there are three states of existence: past, present, and future. So whatever considerations arise in this regard, if related with the spiritual time factor,
then no doubts will remain. Okay, if we are, I'll just continue to read and then I'll explain. Why did a pure spirit soul search for his own happiness? If one puts forward such a question, then doubts arising from the material time factor will manifest. If one can give up such doubts, then he can perform devotional service. Otherwise, there will only be a series of arguments. If arguments are related to the inconceivable nature, then anarthas arise. So, what is the point? Point is, yes, under the spiritual time factor, if one can actually understand, his consciousness is not influenced by the material time factor, which always thinks in terms of past, present, future, then one will be able to understand these things. And doubts will arise. How did a living entity ever begin to think of his own happiness? When? How? When did it happen? How? Prabhupada in so many places says, don't go there. If the fire is burning, you know, don't ask who lit the fire. So many examples. Right? But because we're stuck with the when. How? And if we start getting into arguments, then as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, anarthas will arise. Don't get into arguments. Because he says, if one can give up such doubts, then he can perform devotional service. Otherwise, there will only be a series of arguments. All doubts need to be cleared. All doubts need to be cleared. And yes, sometimes it's very difficult to have all doubts cleared, especially on this particular topic, and especially when we're still under the influence of the time factor. So if you want to start hurling questions about the nature of descent, the original descent, and we've talked mostly about having gone there, one never comes back. We talked about how Jai and Vijay descended by their own desire in service to the Lord. It was not by karma. And we talked about how they only appeared for three births and how about going back. They never had to come back again. And the reason why that evidence was given was to establish proof that it's not Jai and Vijay who comes in every Brahma Kalpa to fight with Lord Nrisingadev. Therefore, when Lord Nrisingadev kills a demon in another Brahma Kalpa, that demon also won't get liberation for the same reason which was established in the appearance of Hiranyakashipu. He won't get liberation. Why? Because he thinks Lord Nrisingadev is a powerful personality. The Lord didn't insinuate his presence, his divinity, and his beautiful qualities, his attractive features, and his wonderful names into the heart of the person he killed. And therefore, he doesn't get, most cases, as Baladev Vijayabhushan says, he doesn't get liberation. Anyways, this is a little extension, I guess it is, to the points that we raised, and I'm quite satisfied with the answers given so far, and I'm quite satisfied with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation. That is, if there are doubts, we should be careful not to get into arguments as long as we're still under the influence of this time factor and we still think in terms of past, present, and future, and we still think in terms of when. And therefore, even Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in many places, he uses since time immemorial, it's a time which cannot be brought into memory. Or when they talk, it cannot be brought into memory. You try to bring it into memory, it cannot be brought into memory as long as one is under the influence of this time factor. So let's try to get our doubts cleared by firm, confident faith and engaging in devotional service to the Lord. One thing is for sure, all evidence is there. Krishna wants us back. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the most beautiful, beautiful expose on how Krishna wants us back. And he's thinking about us. He's meditating on us. He's waiting for us to come. He's running, looking for the opportunity to run and embrace us. I've been thinking about you. I've been waiting for you. He's sending his devotees to try to capture us. And if simply by chanting on some mantras with a desire to associate with the Lord and to hear from the Lord, he's just looking for opportunities. That's one thing that we have unlimited evidence of. Let's go there and forget about all that stuff. Forget about it. It will pass as everything else passes. And just meditate on Krishna, his beauty, his wondrous form, his qualities, his pastimes, and his wonderful name. And by so doing, he will insinuate himself into the hearts of those who genuinely want to serve him because they've had enough of this material world. That's it. That's all that's required. That's my conclusion. Thank you for this opportunity. And bodies are clapping in the background. We will end here. Thank you for the opportunity to extend it a little bit beyond. I did it because it's raining hard out and I can't go for a walk anyways. And for those of you who are still have your morning japa, please continue and embrace the holy name within your heart and pray sincerely to Krishna to please kindly manifest himself in his name before you and so that you may experience him, his association in full. And so much is available. Everything is available. Kali Kali Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar Nama Hoite Hai Sava Jagat Nisara. Krishna's manifested himself in this age as the form of his name. And anyone who's associated with his name because it's not different from him, and because his qualities are in his name, because his pastimes are in his name, because his form is in his name, anyone who associates with his name, then Krishna will certainly insinuate himself into the heart of that devotee and give himself to them. Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda.
Hare Krishna.